As Ye Sow by Dorothy Canfield Fisher. Casually, not that she was especially interested, just to say something, she asked as she handed out the 4 o'clock pieces of bread and peanut butter, "Well, what Christmas songs are you learning in your room this year?" There was a moment's pause. Then the three little boys, her own and the usual two of his playmates, told her soberly, first one speaking, then another, "We're not going to be let to sing. Teacher don't want us in the Christmas entertainment." Their round 8-year-old faces were grave. "Well, I," said the mother, "for goodness sakes, why not?" Looking down at his feet, her own small David answered sadly, "Teacher says we can't sing good enough." "Well enough," corrected his mother mechanically. "Well enough," he repeated as mechanically. One of the others said in a low tone, "She says we can't carry a tune. She's only going to let kids sing in the entertainment that can carry a tune." David, still hanging his head humbly, murmured, "She says we'd spoil the piece our class is going to sing." Inwardly, the mother broke into a mother's rage at a teacher. "So that's what she says, does she? What's she for, anyhow, if not to teach children what they don't know? The idea! As if she'd say she could teach arithmetic only to those who are good at it already." The downcast children stood silent. She yearned over their shame at failing to come up to the standards of their group. "Teachers are callous, that's what they are, insensitively callous. She is deliberately planting an inferiority feeling in them. It's a shame to keep them from going up on the platform and standing in the footlights. Not to let them have their share of being applauded. It's cruel." She drew in a deep breath and put the loaf of bread away. Then she said quietly, "Well, lots of kids your age can't carry a tune, not till they've learned. How'd you like to practice your song with me? I could play the air on the piano afternoons, after school. You'd get the hang of it that way." They brightened. They bit off great chunks of their snacks and said thickly that that would be swell. They did not say they would be grateful to her, or regretted being a bother to her, busy as she always was. She did not expect them to. In fact, it would have startled her if they had. She was the mother of four. So while the after-school bread and butter was being eaten, washed down with gulps of milk, while the November muddy rubbers were taken off, the mother pushed to the back of the stove the interrupted rice pudding, washed her hands at the sink, looked into the dining room where her youngest Janie was waking her dolls up from naps taken in the dining room chairs, and took off her apron. Together the four went into the living room to the piano. "What song is it your room is to sing?" "It came upon the midnight," said the three little boys, speaking at once. "That's a nice one," she commented, reaching for the battered songbook on top of the piano. "This is the way it goes." She played the air and sang the first two lines. "That'll be enough to start on," she told them. "Now," she gave them the signal to start. They started. She had given them food for body and heart, refreshed, heartened with unquestioning confidence in a grown-up's ability to achieve whatever she planned. They opened their mouths happily and sang out,
"It came upon the midnight clear, that glorious song of old."
They had evidently learned the words by heart from hearing them. At the end of that phrase, she stopped abruptly, and for an instant bowed her head over the keys. Her feeling about teacher made a right-about turn. There was a pause. But she was a mother, not a teacher. She lifted her head, turned a smiling face on the three bellowing children. "I tell you what," she said, "the way, really, to learn a tune is just one note after another. The reason why a teacher can't get everybody in her room up to singing in tune is because she'd have to teach each person separately, unless they happen to be naturally good at singing. That would take too much time, you see. A teacher has such a lot of children to see to. They did not listen closely to this. They were not particularly interested in having justice done to teacher, since they had not shared the mother's brief excursion into indignation. But they tolerated her with silent courtesy. They were used to parents, teachers, and other adults, and had learned how to take with patience and self-control their constantly recurring prosy explanations of things that did not matter. "Listen," said the mother, "I'll strike just the two first notes on the piano. It came." She struck the notes. She sang them clearly. Full of good will, the little boy sang with her. She stopped, breathed hard. "Not quite," she said, with a false smile. "Pretty good. Close to it, but not quite yet. I think we'd better take it one note at a time. Bill, you try it." They had been in and out of her house all their lives. They were all used to her. None of them had reached the age of self-consciousness. Without hesitation, Bill sang,
It!
Loudly. After he had, the mother, as if fascinated, kept her eyes fixed on his still open mouth. Finally, "Try again," she said, "but first listen." Oracularly, she told them, "Half of carrying a tune is listening first." She played the note again, and again, and again. Then rather faintly she said, "Peter, you sing it now." At the note emitted by Peter, she let out her breath as if she had been under water and just come up. "Fine," she said. "Now we're getting somewhere. David, your turn." David was her own. "Just that one note." "No, not quite. A little higher." "Not quite so high." She was in a panic. What could she do? "Wait," she told David. "Try just breathing it out. Not loud at all. Maybe you can get it better." The boys had come in a little after 4. It was 5 when the telephone rang, Bill's mother asking her to send Bill home because his Aunt Emma was there. The mother turned from the telephone to say, "Don't you boys want to go along with Bill a ways and play around for a while outdoors? I've got to get supper ready." Cheerfully, sure that she, like all adults, knew just what to do, relieved to see a door opening before them that had been slammed shut in their faces, and very tired of that one note, they put on their muddy rubbers and thudded out. That evening, when she told her husband about it, after the children had gone to bed, she ended her story with a vehement, "You never heard anything like it in your life, Harry. Never. It was appalling. You can't imagine what it was." "Oh, yes, I can, too," he said over his temporarily lowered newspaper. "I've heard plenty of tone-deaf kids hollering. I know what they sound like. There are people, you know, who really can't carry a tune. You probably never could teach them. Why don't you give it up?" Seeing, perhaps, in her face, the mulish mother stubbornness, he said with a little exasperation, "What's the use of trying to do what you can't do?" That was reasonable, after all, thought the mother. Yes, that was the sensible thing to do. She would be sensible for once and give it up. With everything she had to do, she would just be reasonable and sensible about this. So the next morning, when she was downtown doing her marketing, she turned in at the public library and asked for books about teaching music to children. Rather young children, about 8 years old, she explained. The librarian, enchanted with someone who did not ask for a light, easy-reading novel, brought her 2 books, which she took away with her.